broadcasting from the Tiger 1590. From the state whose motto is, live free or die. This is Veritas. The truth, or facsimile thereof, is out there somewhere. Sponsored in part by
Truth, Justice, and the American Way.
That's right, and you better believe it, too. Welcome to Veritas. The truth is out there somewhere on the Tiger 1590. I'm Harvey Warfield, along with Steve Gaudet. Today we'll be talking with Larry Beecraft, constitutional attorney and IRS avenger. Larry just put another notch on his IRS gun with a recent high-profile win. This is Larry's second visit to Veritas, and we'll get some first-hand insight on the IRS's waning grip of tyranny on we the people of the United States. First, a disclaimer, of course, what you want to do is do your own due diligence when you listen to what we're saying on the show. If it sounds like it's something you want to do, do your due diligence and then go out and do it. A couple of things on the hosts here. Steve Gaudet, our co-host, is a practicing attorney in Boston. He normally takes the status quo conventional wisdom view of topics and people we discuss and present. I'm Harvey Warfield. I'm a former longtime Boston radio personality. My background does not normally include the topics or people, but I learn quickly. That being said, Steve, why don't you bring Larry in and let's talk about this recent victory.
Welcome, Larry.
Good.
Hey.
Hey, obviously this isn't going to be like Hannity and Combs, but welcome back to Veritas.
Well, I appreciate it. It's always good to be on y'all's show.
I'll tell you this, though, to be perfectly honest, I saw the show, and Javi did as well,
yeah.
And I'm sure millions of people did, because I know here at the firm it was a buzz. Everybody was talking about it. And, you know, my visceral reaction to Hannity was, my God, an arrogant SOB. But, you know, to be perfectly honest, when Javi first brought this issue to me, I mean, that was my reaction. Were you surprised at all, Larry, at Hannity's reaction?
Well, let me tell you a little bit about Sean. You know, I have been a guest on his show, but it was at the time when he was first a radio personality at his first job, and that was down here in Huntsville, Alabama.
Wow.
You know, he comes, the first job he ever had was down here. But, you know, what they did in that particular show, we were called a friend of the client, Bernie Kuglin. A friend was lining up all the, you know, radio shows and TV shows that we had all these requests for because of the case.
Mm.
And I drove over to Memphis and got there in the afternoon. They said, oh, we got a show lined up. And we did two shows on the Fox Network, the last of which was Sean Hannity. But we thought we had additional time to explain the case, but all they wanted to do was sandwich us in between two commercials in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
We thought we had 10 minutes, and then they just, you know, they brought us on there for the whole purpose of trying to make us look like fools.
Yes, right.
Without having any opportunity to respond.
Yes.
Well, you know, to me, you know, my view is I'll always let, you know, to use the theme of a popular old movie, you know, I'll let them draw first blood.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, once they draw first blood, you know, then they're going to have, they got a fight on their hands. And then the people that think in the way that they do, that they really do have a fight on their hands.
Well, let's get into it. Let's tell people about your latest victory, which really caught many people by surprise because, you know, they're just getting introduced to this whole topic. Larry, would you mind just kind of briefing the case for us?
Bernie Kuglin was a lady, you know, I didn't know it at the time, but, you know, I went to a meeting over in Atlanta back in 92, and I was a speaker there. I didn't speak about taxes, I spoke about treaties.
Mm-hmm.
But there was this airline pilot in the audience, Bernie Kuglin. You know, I didn't know that. You know, she says we met, but, you know, I don't remember it. But, you know, that was the first time I met her. The next time I met her was when I got a call from her earlier that week, but I think everybody else knows who it is.
Yes.
But, you know, nonetheless, those are parameters under which I am operating. If y'all want to say something, be that as it may. But, you know, Bernie moved to Memphis from Texas, and by 92, what she did in this particular situation, she happened to be listening one night to a TV show, and there were some people there from the Constitution Party, and the Libertarian Party, rather. And that got her interested in the Libertarian Party. She became very actively involved, and of course that introduced her into issues regarding taxation. She started looking into it. She did some studying. By 93, 94, and 95, she didn't file returns, but she did subject herself to withholding. And then in the fall of 95, she wrote two letters to the IRS. The first letter was, you know, it just simply asked two questions. You know, she gave a background, but then she asked two questions. What statute of the code makes me liable for the federal income tax, and what statute requires me to file Form 1040? And she expected an answer. She said, please respond within 30 days. When she got no answer to that letter, she again wrote another almost identical letter asking the same two questions. She got no response, so by December 30th of 1995, she went to her employer and said, hey, I want to be exempt. And so from that point forward, she didn't have any withholding and she didn't file income tax returns. And she was indicted earlier this year for six counts of tax evasion, the government's theory being that she didn't file income tax returns and she impeded the collection of the tax by filing exempt W-4 forms.
And am I correct, each count carries, what, 5 years?
Yeah, it was the tax evasion is a felony count, and it carries a maximum statutory period of imprisonment of 5 years.
So 30 years. Potentially she's looking at.
Yeah, but, you know, since 1987, we've been operating under, quote, unquote, scientific federal sentencing guidelines. And, you know, for tax offenses, it's the amount of time you spend in jail is determined by the alleged tax loss. And here in this situation, the government maintains that there are about $250,000 in alleged tax liability. And if you consult the tables, the sentencing guidelines, that translates into roughly 33 to 35 months.
Jeez,
so that's what she was looking at. That was the cost of going to trial.
Right. Okay.
What about fines? Was she subject to any fines? Today?
Yeah. I didn't look that up. One of the things I do with my clients is I tell them about the maximum exposure. Most of them are only interested in, you know, the amount of jail time that they'll serve. But, you know, again, the amount of fine is again dependent upon the guidelines, but I don't recall exactly what that was.
Now, tell us what happened in court. You know what, you know, the interchange between, in a sense, between yourself and the U.S. attorney. What was going on there?
Well, you know, the government. You know, do you want me to kind of tell you about the trial, or do you want to limit it to the, you know, what I did with the prosecutor?
Oh no, I mean the trial too.
Oh, okay. If we got a stretch right here, but if you need to have a break, you know, let me know and I can stop at any point in time. I'm like a piece of bologna; you can cut me off anywhere.
That's all right. We got about 7 or 8 minutes before the first break.
All right. Well, this case, you know, in Memphis, they kind of move cases along, except they also have a whole lot of drug cases. So we were first set for, you know, even though I entered appearance in this case back in sometime early May, you know, the next thing I know is we ended up on the June trial docket. But then we had a mistake, you know, we didn't get notice of the trial docket, so the judge continued it.
Yeah.
Well, then the next time we show up for a docket call is in June, and we asked for a continuance then. And, you know, everybody came to it, you know, we all had a kind of a frame of mind that this case would be tried in August.
Mm-hmm.
So in the latter part of July, we showed up for the status conference, you know, the docket call.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, there were about 30 or 35, maybe 40 cases on that particular docket. But, you know, as we sat there going through it, you know, we had to get up and, you know, our case was called about halfway through the docket. And we were the first case for trial, you know, and all the other cases were being continued or pled out or whatever. But then by the afternoon, you know, we only had, here the judge had set down 2 weeks for trials for his 35 or 40 docket long, 35 or 40 cases on his docket. He set aside 2 weeks, and then we were the only case that was ending up for trial. So, you know, I'll tell you that, you know, in a situation like that, the pressure is off the judge. You know, there's nothing more, you know, if you're in a case, trying a case, and where there's a couple of cases behind you, you know, there's pressure to move through, you know, get this case over with, let's move on to the next one. Well, we didn't have that in this case. So when we started trial on August the 4th, you know, the judge, you know, he had all the time of the world for this case. And so we went through a voir dire process, and voir dire, for the benefit of the listeners, is the process by which you select jurors. And you bring your jury in, and you know, the lawyers and the judges, the judge asks questions of the potential jurors. Now, in this particular case, our judge, you know, not being pressured, you know, he allowed us basically a day to select this jury. Now, here's an interesting, you know, just if you want to tell little war stories as we go along, here's a little interesting fact. The judge was asking jurors, you know, well, gee, what do you think is a good juror for a case like this? And then, you know, they'd say, well, we want you to be impartial, and we went through stuff like that. But one of the things he did is he asked the one juror, says, now, you don't know any of the parties in this case. You don't know who the lawyers are. Pick out the defendant. And the little lady, he asked that question. I looked around the courtroom and studied everybody closely for a couple minutes. And he said, okay, I've got him picked out. And just said, oh, well, who is it? And she pointed to the female special agent. You know, so you know, I thought that was kind of a little bit indicative of IRS agents.
Yeah.
You know, she was the one that, I guess, looked guilty.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, we picked our jury, and the government
and what are you looking, I'm sorry, Larry, but
sure.
This is an interesting point. It may just a little, but what are you looking for in a potential juror on a case like this?
Well, it depends on where you're picking your jury. You know, like if you're in like someplace in Maryland or somewhere around Washington, D.C., or other areas where you've got a lot of federal employees, you know, I end up using a lot of my peremptory strikes, you know, not strikes for cause, but peremptory strikes to get rid of people that work for the government, or you know, after you get rid of the government people, you certainly don't want them on the jury.
Yeah, right.
You know, not in a tax case.
Right.
And then you kind of look for anybody else on the jury that you think would be, you know, favorable to the government, like their own Social Security, they're retired or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I like people that are at least, you know, business people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they run their own companies. The people that I think are kind of free thinkers, they're not, you know, cast in any type of a mold. But then on the same time, you know, the government is sitting there, you know, looking at those are the very people that they want to strike. So when you go through this process of striking, both sides, like in a felony case in federal court, you know, the defense has 10 peremptory strikes and the government has 6. So what you do is you kind of, you know, if you have a spectrum of the jurors, you know, both ends get cut off. You know, the defense cuts off those that are favorable to the government, and the government cuts off those that are favorable to the defense. So you have this great, you know, mass of people kind of in the middle.
Yeah.
And so you don't have really a committed jury that's, you know, clearly favorable to one party or the other.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what happens in voir dire.
Okay.
Well, moving on, you know, the government's case was kind of short, sweet, and simple. One of the things that I thought that this case was the strong point of for the government, you know, they wanted to kind of paint this as a Leona Helmsley type case. Not that, you know, Bernie Kugeln was a Leona Helmsley, but relatively speaking, you know, she was an airline pilot, and her salaries for the years in question ran from, you know, $140,000 to about $170,000 annually.
Right.
So, you know, if you're sitting there and you got a jury of you know, people that work for a corporation that make $40,000 or $50,000 a year, you know, there's a prejudice.
Yeah, they're not going to be necessarily sympathetic.
Yeah. So that's one of the things that the government likes to pick in the way of criminal defendants are people that make good money.
Yeah.
And you know, that creates that, you know, what I call the Leona Helmsley effect. You know, that prejudice there that a typical juror would have for somebody that's not paying their fair share.
Right.
And also making big bucks. You know, you look like, it makes you look like you're greedy.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Larry, we're starting to bump into a break, so let's get back to when we come back from the break, how things started after, did you start off, or did the government start off?
Well, why don't we talk about that when we come back from break?
That sounds great. That sounds great. We're speaking with Larry Beecraft. He's a constitutional attorney and a guy who takes the IRS to task and just had a recent high-profile win for Vernice Kugeln down in Memphis against the IRS. She won. The jury found her, I believe, not guilty or acquitted her. You're listening to Veritas. The truth is out there somewhere on the Tiger 1590. It's Harvey Warfield along with Steve Gaudet and attorney Larry Beecraft. We'll be back in just a moment here on the Tiger 1590. Okay, we're back. This is Veritas. The truth is out there somewhere on the Tiger 1590. Harvey Warfield along with Steve Gaudet and our special guest, Larry Beecraft, constitutional attorney and IRS avenger. Larry, we were just at the point where the jury was all picked and we're in the courtroom, and this is leading to your victory for Vernice Kugeln down there in Memphis.
Well, getting, returning to the trial, the government had provided to us in discovery, you know, one of the things under, in a criminal case, you're entitled to get from the government, you know, the documents that they came up with during the case. So we got that, and, you know, we looked it over, and we, you know, I kind of have some ideas as to the nature of the presentation or the evidence that the government's going to offer during the case by looking through discovery. So I had a wide variety of ideas as to what the government was going to do. But then, you know, I was wondering where the prosecutor was going. He collapsed his case, and we had, you know, not, we didn't have but 12 or 15 witnesses. Most of those were, you know, just people that brought, were brought in just to authenticate documents. You know, here's what we paid Kuglin. Here's this. Here's that. You know, she entered into a lease. You know, little stuff. You know, and but for that, the government wouldn't have had a whole lot of to show. But, you know, that's the way the government was trying this case, make it short, sweet, and simple, and make an appeal to the prejudice of the jury for, you know, here's somebody that's not paying taxes and makes big bucks. Well, then, you know, when the government rested their case, we have to present our defense. Now, let me tell you what you do in getting ready to go to trial in a tax case, or in any case. You know, I've seen a lot of cases tried in court. You know, if I'm either just sitting around while a jury's out, or, you know, if I just happen to be up at the courthouse or something, some, you know, an important case and I want to bump in and watch what's going on, you can see varying stages of preparation by defendants who take the stand. You know, some people are very poorly prepared to take the stand. And when they're very poorly prepared, you know, they look like they are poorly prepared. You know, I think that in a case involving ideology, and that's what these tax cases involve, people that have got, they're participants in a cause. Those types of people, especially since it relates to taxes, those people have got to get up and be persuasive in their testimony. So what you, what I have to do is, you know, I sit down and I go over their testimony at considerable length. You know, I can spend, you know, with Vernie, I probably spent maybe at least 10 days going over her testimony. You know, meaning what we'll do is you build a timeline that refreshes in their mind what they did when, and then they start relating their story to me. You know, I got to look over their exhibits, like the letters they sent and, you know, the stuff that they read. And, you know, there's two different ways of saying things. You can say one thing in a in an offensive way, or you can say the same thing in a manner that's, you know, persuasive. And so, you know, you do those types of things to get ready for trial. And but the ultimate purpose is that defendant's got to have the ability to, you know what their purpose is. They got to get up on the stand and tell their story, and they have to have the ability to look the jury in the eye and convince them. Now, nobody can do that except a defendant. You know, a lawyer can sit there and, you know, crack jokes or, you know, do certain things in the courtroom. Personally, I like to try cases. But, you know, after the jury hears in a tax case, you know, the government side of the case, the natural thing that pops into their mind is, you know, well, gee, Mr. Defendant, tell us why you did this. And when the defendant gets up there on the stand to tell them why they did this, you know, they better be persuasive. And a lot of people that, you know, have never been in a trial setting or never spoken to a group of people, you know, that can be difficult for them. So there's varying skills of defendants for having the ability to get up on the stand and tell their story. But, you know, Bernie got up on the stand and she did tell her story. You know, she told about her working, you know, as a bookbinder and in a library and, you know, working for welfare and then training to be a pilot, and then ultimately getting the dream of her life, you know, a pilot for a major airline. But then she also related the reasons why she did what she did. She told the jury about what she read. She told the jury about the meetings that she attended. You know, she told the jury about what she learned. And, you know, she told the jury, you know, that her whole purpose was to, you know, she reached the conclusion that she wasn't liable for the federal income tax. Now, that is a conclusion that a lot of people reach. And the reason that they reach that is kind of very simple, although, you know, when people are trying to learn this, it takes some time for them to, you know, to actually see it, because it's in the Internal Revenue Code, and the Internal Revenue Code is kind of difficult to read and comprehend and understand.
Right.
But, you know, the government itself, the Internal Revenue Service, says that there's three laws that relate to the requirement to file income tax returns. And two of those laws relate to, you know, you can see that the subject of the laws, the parties that are identified as being required to file returns, those are described as persons liable. Well, you know, you can see how Congress makes persons liable for other types of taxes. You know, they expressly say so in a statute. Well, in reference to the federal income tax, there is only one section. You know, the Internal Revenue Code is divided into parts, and Subtitle A contains the operative provisions of the income tax. And, you know, the only section there that makes anyone, quote, liable, unquote, for the federal income tax are the withholding agents for non-resident aliens and foreign corporations.
Now,
you know, that is an oddity of the Internal Revenue Code, and that is enough to create real problems for a lot of people. They say, well, gee, I'm not liable for the federal income tax.
Right.
And, you know, that was Bernie's belief. You know, gee, you know, in addition to, you know, looking at a lot of other stuff, for example, the Paperwork Reduction Act requires the government agencies to assign OMB control numbers not only to forms but also to regulations. And, you know, it's real odd, you know, the tax is imposed in Section 1 of the Internal Revenue Code, at least for individuals. But the collection of information, according to the Paperwork Reduction Act, that applies to Section 1 of the Code is a form called Form 2555, and if you look at that, it says foreign earned income.
Foreign earned income.
Right. Hmm. And, you know, it's things like that, you know, people when they, you know, the vast American public has never taken a look at the Internal Revenue Laws.
No, we've just
well,
been
Larry, we had... I don't know if you recall, but we had on this show two IRS agents, not former, but active IRS agents, on to address this question. Where in the IRS tax code does it explicitly state that a U.S. citizen earning a wage or income in the United States owes federal tax? And we have them on tape saying, ultimately, it's not in there. It's not in there.
Yeah.
But all they could tell us is, if you don't pay, we can tell you what's going to happen to you.
Right. Or it might be in there indirectly.
Well, yeah,
this whole thing about Section 1, tax imposed, you know, maybe there will be a time in the future when the whole story is revealed to the American people.
Okay.
And let me tell you, it's going to be a shocker. It's going to be a real shocker.
Let me ask you,
it goes along the lines with what these agents just said. Right. You know, the only ones liable are the withholding agents for non-resident aliens and foreign corporations. That's the only specific statutory party that's made liable for the federal income tax.
Okay, now
Larry, in this case, I'm sorry, Javi, can I just get one question?
All right, one, but I want to get
Javi, Larry, in this case, did the government file a motion in limine to suppress bringing in the statute?
Well, no, you know, a lot of times there are motions in limine filed. The government will wait right before trial starts, and then they come out with, you know, the typical. I think they pull it off the DOJ website. You know, you just download this, and you insert the style, and boom, you file it. Well, you know, I typically never even respond to it.
Yeah.
And because what you can do is, you know, I just address it at the start of the case.
Okay.
You know, I tell the jury I tell the court, and I tell the jury, you know, the law is going to come from the court. Now, the purpose of a defendant when he takes on the stand is to talk about his beliefs.
Right.
And he's not there to tell the jury about the law. And I tell the judge, you know, I'm going to tell the jury throughout this whole trial that that's what's going to go on. The defendant's going to testify about beliefs.
And once
there's not going to be, quote, any testimony coming in about, you know, the law is that wages are not income or something like that.
Right.
You know, once you tell the judge, you know, it's all beliefs. You know, the government wasted his time with the motion to limine.
Well, now let me ask you this. Does that mean that the judge will have to, go along with your assessment of what is going to be decided by the jury?
Well, you know, that is what's going to be decided by the jury.
Can he influence that and say, no, this is about law?
Well, no, but see, testimony is facts.
All right.
And during the course of a trial, people are testifying about facts, and beliefs are facts.
Okay.
And, you know, after all the facts come in, then you have the judge is going to instruct the jury on the relevant law. And, you know, a lot of people I've seen, it's just been my experience, it doesn't, you know, doesn't happen to me, but, you know, the government files these motions and liminees, and those that don't know how to respond to it, you know, both sitting there and saying, hey, look, we're not going to try to tell the jury what the law is. We're going to testify about our beliefs.
Okay. Larry, can we, in order to, I think to help, you know, like, what I'm hearing in Javi is a little confusion in the sense that, can you help us out by defining for us, you know, two criminal prongs, two prongs to every criminal act, that, you know, the actus rea,
and
that juggling up for the mens rea requirement?
Right, okay, well, you know, there are two types of, in reference to criminal law, you know, one of the things you learn in law school is that there are, in reference to intent, there are two types of statutes. Mm-hmm. There's one type of statute that requires, or let's address first the other way around, you know, malaprohibita cases, mm-hmm. or malaprohibita statutes. You don't have to have any type of criminal intent in order to be convicted. And the typical example of that is, you know, like if you jump into a truck and you've got, you know, a load of explosives, you know, whether you knew it or not, if you drive through the downtown area of some large city, you know, if you get pulled over and they find about you got explosives in there, they're going to prosecute you and send you to jail. Doesn't matter about your intent.
Right.
All right, but there are other types of laws that, you know, where intent is extremely important. And, you know, like in murder case, you know, the murderer is, you got to have the intent to kill somebody. Manslaughter is a lesser degree of homicide. You don't have to have an intent there, you know, and so like if you're drunk and you plow through an intersection and kill somebody, the government may charge you with murder, but your defense will be, well, gee, I was so drunk, I didn't have any intent, I didn't know this party here, it was all an accident. You know, and so even in murder, there are varying degrees of intent. Now, in a criminal tax case in federal court, you know, the government, or the issue that the jury will decide is whether or not the defendant acted willfully. And willfully means that, you know, they deliberately and intentionally refuse to file income tax returns.
Okay, now, may I get to my point?
Sure.
Geez, we're bumping into a break. I think my point is, and we'll get back to this, is if indeed the jury is deciding intent or belief, right?
Right.
And the judges, and they come back with their verdict, and you said the judge tells them what the law is that they have to go and do, that should be pretty good to have him try and interpret what the tax code is. Anyway, that should be quite interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, well, listen, we're bumping into a break. We're speaking with Larry Beecraft, who just got a very high-profile win against the IRS. This is Veritas. The truth is out there somewhere on the Tiger 1590. Harvey Warfield along with Steve Gaudet. We'll be right back with Larry Beecraft after this break.
Title.
You want answers!
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Son, we live in a world that has walls, and those walls have to be guarded by men with guns. Who's going to do it? You? You don't want the truth.
All right, we're back. This is Veritas. The truth is out there somewhere in the Tiger 1590. Harvey Warfield, along with Steve Gaudet and Larry Beecraft. Got to do a little business before we get back to the thing. Coming up next week, Barry Zwicker. He is a Canadian TV journalist with one of the most controversial 9/11 videos out there. This is the second anniversary, of course, of 9/11. We will attempt to learn what has been learned and what is still being kept from us. On the 18th of September, President Thomas Jefferson back with his State of the Union 2003. That should be quite interesting. If you'd like to communicate with us, our email address for questions or comments is veritasradio@aol.com. That's all one word, Veritas, V-E-R-I-T-A-S-R-A-D-I-O. At AOL.com, our website, veritasradio.com. We want to thank, too, Larry, by the way, Joe Bannister, who I'm sure you know.
Yes, he was a good friend of mine.
Very nice guy, and he's a new friend of Steve's and mine, along with John Turner. Joe Bannister gave some really good publicity to this week's show on a website that I guess talks about liberty issues, and we got scads and scads of new hits on Tuesday and Wednesday, and I'm sure today, too. So there's a lot of people listening, and we thank Joe Bannister for putting that up there. So let's get
Joe's a former special agent with the Internal Revenue Service.
Right, that's right. A former gun-carrying special agent. And he now works for us, the people. So it's great, and we like that. All right, now we're in the courtroom. Bernice is trying to convince the jury of her intent was not willful, tax evasion, but it was something that she believed. Is that correct?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Uh-huh. All right.
Because, you know, if the jury is convinced, right or wrong, reasonable or unreasonable, mm-hmm. that the defendant really believed what he said he believed, then he doesn't have the criminal intent to violate the tax law.
So does that mean that the penalty will be less or the penalty will be voided?
No, well, that'll mean that the party, if the jury is convinced that the defendant really believed, you know, the jury's got to make this determination. They're going to listen to all the evidence,
yeah,
and particularly the defendant's testimony.
All right.
But they're going to make a determination. Well, did this party really know that he was required to file income tax returns, or did the party, the defendant, believe that he wasn't required to file returns for the reasons he explained? Now, if they believe that he really knew that he was required to file returns and he was just blowing smoke at them in the courtroom, then they'll find him guilty.
Okay.
But if the jury concludes that the defendant really believed what he said and that he believed that he didn't have to file returns, then it's their duty to acquit the defendant.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's the standard. That's in reference to federal criminal tax cases, that's the standard of willfulness. And what a defense attorney does, you know, I've created my willfulness instructions many years ago. But, you know, when you go into a trial, what I do is I submit a trial brief in advance of trial. You know, you got to know what potential evidence problems might crop up or, you know, some of the other little problems of the case, and I like to address those in a trial brief. You know, not that the judge will ever read it. Not that you may not even go, you may go to a trial without ever using the brief. But if something does come up, you know, like an evidence question comes up, you say, well, Judge, you know, you're arguing at sidebar. Well, read it. You know, here on page such and such of my brief, you know, read these cases. Or take this into consideration. Well, in addition to submitting trial briefs, what a defense attorney does is just submit in advance the requested jury instructions. And, of course, you know, the government submits jury instructions and the defense submits jury instructions.
Oh, I'd like to hear what the government jury instructions were.
Yeah, well, you know, we have you know, I have a friend of Bernice's. He's going to be putting together the transcript of the trial. He may put the other stuff in there, like at least the jury instructions. I don't know.
I mean, are they off the wall instructions or?
They're not off the wall. Okay. You know, the lawyers know what the case is about.
No.
They know what the jury should be instructed about. You know, certain critical points of the case, and you know, particularly like the elements that must be proven in order to convict somebody. And, you know, so lawyers, you know, but I have about 20 or 30 willfulness instructions I submit. Not, you know, and there are that many because I like to have the judge sit there and read a whole bunch of willfulness instructions and, you know, kind of has, the effect of, willfulness is real important and, you know, here's some very important strong points.
Larry, how did the cross-examination go against your client? What was that like?
You know, there's two types of prosecutors. There are prosecutors, you know, it's kind of like the DOJ sends these guys to school where they teach them about how to examine the defendants. There are some prosecutors that kind of take the safe route, which is, you know, they'll sit there and rather than getting into the defendant's belief in a tax case, you know, they'll just sit there and go over their own case, the government side of the case. Well, do you admit you made so much and blah, 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 you know, go through and get them to admit all the exhibits. And then conclude and sit there and say, well, you know, the other thing that's in dispute in this case is your intent, right? Well, you know, that's playing it safe. There are other types of prosecutors that will kind of wade in and do battle with the defendant, you know.
Yeah.
But in this particular case, you know, the prosecution, you know, kind of waded in and, you know, challenged Bernice on some of her beliefs. You know, but really the government's theory of the case, what they wanted to paint to the jury was, you know, the Leona Helmsley type approach.
Yeah.
You know, gee, you know, this is a lady that makes big bucks. And, you know, gee, she's nothing more than greedy.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you have to have a theme of your case and you have to prosecute, you have to harp on, you know, keep bringing up over and over again the theme of your case so that, you know, the jury can begin to believe it.
Right.
The theme in our case was that, you know, the whole case could have been avoided if the government had just simply answered the two questions that Bernie had posed to her when she wrote those letters in the fall of 95.
Well, now let me ask you that. Even in terms of, like, procedurally, could you have brought up that issue? Could you also not only go and attack the mens rea, but could you also open up the issue of, well, you know, let's look at the statute and let's look at the IRS.
You can't, but you know, let me tell you, I used to do that quite extensively. For example, I had a case 10 years ago in this same courthouse. You know, there were 17 defendants that went to trial in that case. That case was 5 months long. It was a giant conspiracy case.
Yeah.
You know, I represented the lead defendant in that case, Franklin Sanders. The jury came back, and you know, we listened for 15 minutes, 52 not guilty verdicts. you can tangle with the issues of who's required to file a return, but let me tell you, there's a lot of adverse cases out there that one must deal with. And for the people involved in the tax movement, you know, going about it the way that they're going about it now is just not the right approach for, you know, dealing with the issue of tax imposed in Section 1.
So, and what would you recommend?
Well, you know, it's what I recommend is not something I can say publicly.
Okay, no problem.
You know, primarily because, you know, there's the government's listening.
Yep.
And then there's also a bunch of other people that would, gee, you know, I heard this, you know, I want to go run to court and do this.
Right. No, understood.
So, obviously, Vernice convinced the jury that
she
her
did.
Intent, that she was convinced that she was not liable.
Yeah, well,
and they came back and that's how they voted.
Well, the jury took almost 2 days to decide. You know, mm-hmm. we had closing arguments on a Thursday, and they deliberated through the rest of Thursday. Then they came back on Friday, and finally on Friday afternoon, you know, they came back with their not guilty verdict. After the verdict came back, we did talk to the jurors.
Mm-hmm.
And the jurors told us that the first vote for, to determine where they were split, you know, there was 3 in favor of acquittal and the rest were in favor of conviction.
Wow.
Well, between, you know, that first vote and Friday afternoon, things changed. And the 12 jurors came over to the point of, you know, she's not guilty.
Wow. Any questions during deliberation?
I don't think that there was. You know, sometimes there are. You know, the jury will have a question. The other was, but on Thursday afternoon, they came back in and said that they were hopelessly deadlocked. You know, but what you typically do in a situation like that is just implore them. You know, ask them to go back and consider keep on deliberating.
And can you, Larry, kind of tell us about who made up the jury?
Well, also, if we could, what is her status now as far as the IRS? Is she getting notices of deficiency or what?
Yeah. They've already started to work on her to answer that last question. So
could this be another trial or what?
Well, you know, there's going to be civil proceedings following all this. You know, in fact, that's what the government's doing right now. You know, I talked to Vernie last week, and, you know, they're already cranking it up to go after her civilly.
Civilly? Oh, to pay the money.
Yeah, right.
All right, listen, we're bumping into another break. We've got to come back and wrap this up. This is Veritas. The truth is out there somewhere. We're trying to find it today here on the Tiger 1590. Harvey Warfield along with Steve Gaudet and our special guest Larry Beecraft, constitutional attorney and IRS avenger. We'll be back after this break here of the Tiger 1590. This is Veritas. All right, we're back. This is Veritas. The truth is out there somewhere on the Tiger 1590. Harvey Warfield along with Steve Gaudet and Larry Beecraft. We're going to try and put a lid on this whole thing. So in this civil thing that may be brought against her, do you think that she's going to have to end up paying the taxes? Or
what? I don't know. It depends on what the people in the tax movement do over the next couple of years.
Uh-huh. Okay.
You know, there's a lot that needs to be done, but I don't see it being done in a coordinated basis.
Okay, but this is a victory. This is a major victory for us.
Yeah, acquittal in a criminal case is a victory.
That's great. That is excellent. Now, you alluded when we were first starting to talk, when people find out the real story of the IRS, they're going to be quite surprised. There's no chance you can go into that, can you?
No.
Okay,
that's
all right. I didn't think you could. And here's a question from a listener in Ohio, Ann, out in Coshocton, Ohio. She said she heard you on another radio show state that the IRS is working on a response to the tax honesty movement in the realm of what our military set out to do in Iraq. The shock and awe approach. Please ask him to elaborate on that comment.
Well, I'll do so, Harvey. Right. The only thing I can say is that over the last couple of 2 months, mm-hmm. information has been provided to us. It seems like it's coming from a source that's credible. And the source made some statements to us that, you know, in response to, you know, I've been seeing this developing since February the 28th of 2001.
And why? Why since then?
Well, you know, that's the day that my phone was ringing off the wall when the IRS was executing search warrants all across the country. That's when the day that we learned that one-third of the special agents had been devoted to a project for about 3 years to go after certain particular groups. And since that time, you know, they've increased their law enforcement. They've issued... You know, they've sued a lot of people to shut down websites and stuff
like that.
Right,
right, right. And we've reported on that here.
Yeah, and you know, our information is that the government was planning and still has plans to engage in, just like they had shock and awe for the Iraqi military, you know, they're going to have shock and awe for the tax movement.
Well, isn't that exciting?
Yeah.
So when is this imminent? Are we saying next 6 months?
I don't know. But, hey, look, it's been going on. And, you know, I just think it's going to probably kind of step up.
Well, but how can they step it up if they have no leg to stand on, right?
Well,
Steve?
You know, hey, look, you know, the government is a very powerful, the law enforcement is very powerful. And a lot of people have a kind of a naive view about how to react to, you know, the implementation and enforcement of laws. It's not done by the way that the tax movement and other opponents of the government do it right now. You know, there's a whole lot of work that needs to be done on a coordinated basis.
Well, sum up, what is it that they have to do, the people in the tax movement?
Well, you know, I see a lot of people in the tax movement. They just come along, they read a couple of books, and, gee, I don't have to file income tax returns.
Right.
And then they never do anything after that. You know, they never contribute to the battle. They won't do anything politically. Mm-hmm. You know, they sit around like knots on a log.
Okay, I think last time you and I were speaking, you said that it really needs to be some kind of a lobby. Now, I know that Bob Schultz with his We the People movement is doing something, but you're not too enamored of that, or do you think
it's... Well, you know, that is the place. Yes, I'm glad that it's going on. And mm-hmm. incidentally, you know, Joe Bannister's good friend,
right,
and a good friend of mine, Dean Kidd, is working with
right.
Bob Schultz right now.
That's correct. Yes.
And, you know, so she's heading up, some of the coordination activities and stuff like that. And that is desperately needed, you know, putting the political pressure on the government and congressmen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but there's more to this mix than just, you know, that type of activity.
Okay.
Yeah, and right now it's still, at least to my perception, still appears almost as a fringe element, and you're not going to cause any type of, you know,
Absolutely.
General swell in the
yep.
population until you begin to legitimize.
How do we take it out of the fringe?
I don't know. You know, that's one of the things I've been battling for a number of years. You know, there's a lot of people that are running around, you know, reclaim your straw man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are some flaky arguments out there that are being promoted, and, you know, it's the promotion of arguments that lack any substance that are damaging.
I know. Okay. All right. Larry, how can people get in touch with you? Do you have a website?
I do. There's two places. I emailed to you both of them a minute ago, but the simplest website is LarryBcraft.com.
Okay, LarryBcraft, BECRAFT.com. So LarryBcraft.com, they can get information there.
Right.
Wow. Well, Larry, thank you so much. Steve, a parting shot or what?
No, Larry, thank you very much. Congratulations on your victory.
Well, Steve and Harvey, I enjoy being with you on the radio show.
Well, thanks. We'll have you on another day, I am sure.
Oh,
appreciate
yeah.
it.
Larry, thanks
Y'all
so much.
Have a good day.
All right. Thank you. All right. From Huntsville, Alabama, Steve, huh?
Yep.
Gotta love it. Wow. So a great victory, but then she has to go back into that into the civil court, perhaps, to see if she's going to have to pay the money or whatever?
No.
What?
The court proceedings are over. Now she's probably going to go through administrative
stuff.
Relief. And,
Yikes.
You know.
All right, listen, we got to go. Next week, second anniversary of 9/11, we have Barry Zwicker with his talk about his video, one of the most controversial videos out there. This has been Veritas on the Tiger 1590. I'm Harvey Warford along with Steve Gaudet. Thank you, Steve. The Tom O'Brien Show is next right here on the Tiger. Thanks again to Larry Becraft. We appreciate it.